Reading are making some familiar acquaintances this year with two quick-fire games against Nottingham Forest and now a trio of clashes with Cardiff booked in after Saturday's 1-1 draw in the FA Cup fourth round. Welcome to episode 218 of the Tyler Stem podcast with your host Mark Mayo, and joining me this week, Johnny Williams. And Johnny, I hope you like the Severn Bridge, because we're going to be making a couple journeys across it in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say that I'm becoming a familiar voice again on the podcast after my absence. And yeah, 2020 seems to be, some familiar faces and familiar names popping up.
Yeah, and actually thinking about it, I mean, my uni days at Cardiff are certainly a little bit too long gone for my liking now. But back in the days of the old Severn Bridge Toll, I don't even think we have the Severn Bridge Toll anymore. So the fact you can hop over
for free. No, I think they've taken it off.
Yeah, you can hop over for free now. So we've got Friday night coming up is the Championship game, and I don't think it's been quite announced yet, but supposedly the replay, are we looking for the Tuesday after that, I think?
Yes, I think that's what they say, so make a long weekend of it. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Perfect. Where else would you rather be in late January, early February?
Yeah, there's plenty of interesting nights out to be had in Cardiff, and you probably will need an umbrella as well, and also the Six Nations, actually, which is why we're playing on Friday, but we'll get into that a bit later on. But let's actually jump into talking about this 1-1 draw with Cardiff on Saturday in the FA Cup fourth round as Reading set up a replay.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Another 11 changes was the story as we went into this one, Johnny. It was, I think we were debating beforehand, weren't we, on our chat about whether Cardiff are going to make six, we'll make six. It's going to be a bit of both teams going half and half. Maybe Cardiff are going to take a bit more seriously than us. Maybe Bowen will surprise us a little bit and make no changes whatsoever. In the end, it was 11, and I think it was actually a more or less 18, because the entire subs bench was completely different as well. The subs bench was aged, the average age of the subs bench was under 20, and with four centre-backs on it, or in it, which I suppose, as we'll get onto later, was actually quite a wise idea. But it felt like the team actually itself, the quality of the starting 11, wasn't actually too bad. With, you know, you've got Miazga, Winamota, Charlie Adam in there. It seemed like we actually did put out a strong-ish team for this game.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's sort of recency bias. Now that results are picked up, we suddenly think a lot more of our players. But no, when you look at that squad, including the likes of Winamota, who was our player of the season last year, Charlie Adam, who's had a fantastic couple of months under Bowen, Omar Richards, who's in an eternal fight to be the number one left back at the club, and Yaku Mate, who was our top goal scorer last year, there's enough quality in there to say that this was a team that, you know, not necessarily is fully of championship quality all the way through, but certainly has enough quality to compete in a match like this. And you look at the Cardiff side, and you know, there's a lot of names in there that you would recognise. So I think probably Cardiff put out something closer to their first, or rather their full strength 11. But you know, there's certainly, you look at that squad now, and there does seem to be a good amount of strength in depth there. Again, I don't know whether that is just recency bias of the fact that Reading are suddenly, you know, getting results and we're looking at our players in a far more favourable light. But it certainly, you know, wasn't when you think we've made 11 changes, you think, oh God, what's it going to be? And certainly when you looked at the bench, there was some of that with, you know, players looking to make their debuts, as Ben House did, becoming, you know, another new academy graduate. But in terms of the first 11, I don't think you could have many arguments that it was quite a strong team for one that had made, you know, a vast amount of changes,
and also one that was going to play, you know, had played in midweek and is going to play next midweek and is obviously, you know, going to play the midweek after that as well now. So yeah, it didn't turn out too well, as Reading conceded with 5 minutes on the clock. I think sort of Yaku Mate was caught on possession, and decent-ish ball in, decent-ish header across the back, we couldn't deal with it. We did sort of suffer from their set pieces early on in the game, and it did feel like actually, as you know, throughout the game as well, but certainly in that first half, there were a lot of lump balls into the box that Reading just didn't really, which surprises me, didn't really know how to deal with, because we had Miazga and Tom McIntyre in there, who you think probably would be good at dealing with those sort of balls in.
I mean, it was actually one of the first observations that I made of the team at one of the first corners or free kicks was the team is not particularly tall. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, you need every player to be sort of 6'2", 6'3", or above. But aside from Matt Miazga, there didn't really seem to be much height in the team. I mean, McIntyre seems like, you know, he's on the sort of shorter end of centre backs, and in terms of when we played goal kicks, you know, with this team, it was sort of being lumped forward every time. And the only person really who could win a header up there was Yaku Mate, and again, he's, you know, he's 6 foot and not much more. So, in a way, it's not really a surprise that their goal came from, well, like you say, recycling a set piece. I think it was Aidan Flint who was still up there from another set piece, and when you've got him on Omar Richards in the air, there's only really going to be one winner. And, you know, sure enough, it was easy enough turn in for Patterson. Could Walker have done more? You know, I'm not so sure, because I guess there's an argument that Flint could have directed his header straight at goal, and so Walker sort of, you know, it was one of those sort of like the free kick where you don't know whether someone's going to get a touch on it, so the goalkeeper kind of can't make a decision, because then if he does, he looks a bit foolish. So, you know, I don't fully blame him. I mean, maybe one of the centre backs could have taken charge a little bit more, but yeah, it was, as it turned out to be, just a mismatch for their first goal. But like you said, Reading, one of the redeeming qualities under Mark Bowen seems to have been this bounce back ability that we have, and we've gone behind.
It's a Soccer AM throwback to a number of years ago.
Yes, quite. And yeah, we've fallen behind in a fair amount of our games, but there aren't too many that we've gone on to lose. We've normally gone on to at least salvage a draw from them.
Yeah, the stats on that are four of the last five games we've fallen behind in. Three of those we've levelled up, and as we know, Yaku Mate was the man who got the ball in the back of the net from an offside position, funnily enough, to make it 1-1 quite, I think it's 8 minutes in. Then he actually was onside later on in the half when he had a goal disallowed from a Sonny Aluko rebound. It's worth mentioning as well that Yaku Mate paid tribute to his late father in that, which is why he missed the midweek game at Nottingham Forest. So it's a really nice moment to see Yaku sort of pay tribute to his dad in that. And for in terms of how our attack panned out, because for the second half we hung on, let's face it, but in terms of how the attack panned out, did we really, what were the benefits of the players that were on the pitch? What did they do well? Because Danny Loader, whenever he kind of got on the ball, there were a couple moments when he, you know, was a bit of a counter-attack. He had a bit more space and he managed to lose that space quite quickly. Sonny Aluko had bits and pieces that looked all right. Mate and McCleary, certainly in the second half for me, just weren't in the game. Charlie Adam was too far deep, really, to sort of make anything tangible happen. And it kind of felt like the attack weren't able to relieve the pressure that was being put on the defence.
Yeah, I think the problem that he had, or the problem that Bowen had with the team that he selected, was it seems to me to be a lot of players that are happier to pick the ball up about 30 yards out and run in on goal. And there's no one really that, you know, is happy to either get the ball in the box and shoot or take the ball into the box and shoot. There's a lot of sort of, you think of McCleary, who's a player who obviously thrives or has made a career on the wing, taking on his man and putting the ball in the box. He's not really known for charging through the middle and getting the shot in. Same with Aluko. You could see the amount of times he sort of, you know, did his player sort of about 30 yards out and then tried to pick a pass. You can see that there's a certain amount of quality there. And I know we've got a question on him in the mailbag, so I'll save any further thoughts there. Mate, again, he's a player who tends to like to, you know, he likes playing on that right wing and cutting in and firing a shot in or you know, finding someone in the middle. Loader, I'm a bit lost with him. I think many fans are, just knowing what his strength is or what he does. I think this was, like we've suggested, with the loss of Joao and the injury we had earlier in the season to Puskas, this really was a team that needed a focal point up front, whether that was someone to hold up the ball or someone to bring others into play, or even someone to get on the end of balls in the box. once they were being delivered, because it didn't, it seemed like a lot of number 10s, you know, the player just behind the main striker, and no one who's there as a sort of a poacher or a target man to finish off those moves. And I think it sort of sums it up that our goal came from, you know, a ball over the top from Charlie Adam, which was well finished off by Yaku Mate, albeit he was in an offside position. And as you know, as for his tribute, I mean, it really was, you know, an emotional moment for, I think, everyone in the stadium, because you could see how much it meant to him. The fact that almost as soon as he scored, he, you know, he was in tears. And it was one of those reminders that footballers are human as well, and they have to deal with the emotions of being a, you know, a normal person as well. And, you know, great credit to him to be able to sort of bounce back from the, you know, the difficult week that he must have had to do that. And it, you know, it really was a fitting tribute that Mate paid.
It was, and he's always come across to me as someone who wears his heart on his sleeve.
He's an emotional player, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's
a very really runs player. Off his engine is runs off that, doesn't it? You can tell. I think it kind of,
it's a bit like Charlie Adam, although Charlie Adam's very much passionate of a different kind.
Yeah, and I think Charlie Adam's probably over the years has almost added a little bit of a sort of slyness to his game as well, which is probably the experience talking that I think if Yaku Mate could add to his game, I think he'd be a very, very good player. But it sounds to me like with the attack, we had a lot of ideas, men, is kind of what it sounds to me with the number 10 sort of idea. And there's no one to say, good idea, now give me the ball and I'll finish it, basically.
Yeah, you know, if you had Baldock there or if you had Puskás there, they might know those runs to make in behind, or at least, you know, get the shot off from the edge of the box. Whereas it seemed to be a lot of players there who were happier to play the final pass rather than to, you know, to finish the move off kind of thing.
Yeah, and I suppose the idea in putting Ben House on, 75 minutes he came on, which is a minute that you might want to remember as this conversation progresses, because he is meant to be that sort of, not prolific necessarily, but that sort of towering target man, someone you can hit and play the ball into and maybe run off, which was a good idea to put him on, given how the game was going. It sort of followed after a few unfortunate incidents for Reading, though. Matt Miazga going off with what seems to be a pretty bad knee injury. He looked very upset as he was being stretched off. So hopefully, I mean, it's in a cynical kind of way, you can say that it's maybe not as much of a worry as it was before, given that he's now not actually one of the top two centre-backs being played week in, week out. But it's certainly, you know, as you add Tom McIntyre to the list of absentees, now that he got sent off, with 10 minutes to go, he got sent off McIntyre. So the defence was kind of stretched, and Ben House then had to go off as the full guy for that sub, for the sending off, because we obviously needed to put another centre-back on. Cardiff all over us at this point. So Gabriel Osho and Andre Burley were the players who came on. With the House thing, it's harsh. It's obviously not what you want to be doing as a manager or what you want to be seeing as a fan. But in the cold light of day, I think the tactical element of it, with him being the inexperienced one, with obviously Aluko and that having been in the game and knowing the game a bit more, it probably was just about the unavoidable decision.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate for House, because, like I said, it was, I believe, his senior Reading debut. So
yeah,
hardly the dream debut that he would have wanted. But I'm sure that when the adrenaline dies down, he will realise. And I'm sure that the management team will have told him that, you know, this was a decision that almost had to be made for the good of the team. Like you say, you've got players of known quality on there, and you know, unfortunately for House, he you know was the sacrifice. On the point you make about Miazga and McIntyre, I think Miazga's injury is actually an ankle injury rather than a knee injury from comments that have been made afterwards, but it did look and sound quite serious in the immediate aftermath. I mean, he looked to be in tears as he was being carried off the field. I guess in a way it's only lucky that Mark Bowen seems to have reverted to that back four over the last month or two, certainly in the second half of his reign so far, and he does seem to have settled on Moore and Morrison as the as the first choice too. And in a way, I was a little bit frustrated with McIntyre getting sent off. I think the first booking he got was a little bit harsh. I think it was for a cynical foul, and I think there were a couple of other cynical fouls that went unchallenged by the referee. So I felt a little bit for him that the first one was perhaps a little harsh. But no arguments with the second. And I was actually literally thinking about 30 seconds before he got sent off, he's probably going to be my man of the match today, because I thought that he, it literally was. I was going to say it to my dad. I didn't quite say it. And then luckily I didn't, because I would have looked like an absolute fool. But he, you know, he looked composed in possession. He didn't win as many headers as Miazga, but he generally, I thought, dealt with the threat quite well. And, you know, I think as long as he's got an experienced head alongside him, and he's not being relied on to be the first choice centre back, I certainly think you could push through a few games with him were something to happen to Moore or Morrison. And certainly with Miazga, if he misses a lot of time, then I don't think you'd have too many worries about putting McIntyre in based on that performance.
No, and he's become a pretty popular player as well, because he's obviously got the Reading connections, and he's seems to be a likeable kind of guy, and he comes across as, you know, a genuine fan of the football club who is living his dream playing it. But at the same point, we've got to remember that he's an inexperienced centre-back. Centre-backs are probably the last position to learn, if you know what I mean, in terms of gaining experience. It's probably the one where experience counts the most, and it was a very inexperienced tackle that he made. On an unkinder day, some fans might have been calling for it to be in a straight red, because he kind of goes in a little bit high. But, you know, it is what it is, and he'll be back for the replay, because I can't imagine he'd have played in the league anyway with his one-game ban. Before we move on then, Johnny, I would say that the draw was at 7:15 on Monday, given the fact we're in it. And also, we are quite lucky to be in it, in a way, because Sol Bamba in particular, with a terrible miss at the far post, and you can argue as well that the two players who got a touch on it before it got to Bamba should have finished it off for Cardiff, and that was about 88 minutes, I think. We did kind of hang on, given the fact we had 10 men, and obviously what we've said about our strikers and everything just being out of the game late on. I'm not too worried or embarrassed, as it were, that we did have to sort of scrap out this draw.
No, I mean, you know, obviously there's an argument that being the home side and it being a championship clash, you should try and dominate things. But like I said at the start, I think in the context of things, it's a decent team at championship level, but you know that it's not our first choice 11. And, you know, assuming that is something close to Cardiff's first choice side, then I certainly don't think you'd have anything to worry about for the championship game when we put out our full strength team. And as for Bamba's miss, that was utterly ridiculous. I mean, you could even see as he ran sort of back to his central defensive position. I mean, he had his head in his hands until he hit the halfway line. I mean, he could not understand how he missed it. And I'm sure he'll be replaying that moment over and over in his head tonight.
Yeah, it's one of those that kind of, if it is a tie that we go on to win, it's certainly going to be the turning point of that tie. It kind of reminds me as well as it wasn't an awful miss, but when we played Huddersfield a few years back and Huddersfield player got sent off, I think with them 2-0 up in the replay at Medeski, and one of their midfielders got sent off, and then from then we just blitzed them and easily won 5-2, I think it was. It reminds me of that sort of moment when a player manages to turn the tie on its head with a silly action. So let's hear from Mark Bonan what he thought of the 1-1 draw with Cardiff. Then we'll be back for the other 1-1 draw of the week and have a quick chat about the game with Forest.
I mean, I spoke to him through the week. I was in constant contact with him. He's a hugely difficult week, but he wanted to come back and play today, you know. And even in training yesterday, you could see, you know, he's a little bit distant because he's got thoughts in other places, probably with his family, but he showed his professionalism today. And yet again, he worked to the 95th minute. I put him up front as a lone striker and he kept working and chasing. And for him to get his goal, I think he was, you know, I had a lump in my throat as well, because I know what it meant to him. His dad was his biggest supporter. His dad was one of our biggest supporters, always like following every game on you know, television or whatever he could get the streaming for it. So, yeah, it's been difficult for him, but we're here for him and we'll give him all the support he needs.
So a bit of deja vu then on Wednesday night, I think it was. We went to Nottingham Forest. It's hard to remember right now in this sort of January period of games after games after games. And, the not so much enforced by our own errors, as you can imagine, with FA Cup replays and whatnot, but with the rearranged game at Forest after their waterlogged pitch, a 1-1 draw was the case of the late equaliser once again, as Sam Baldock popped up in the 85th minute this time. Pretty tardy, really, with our late equalisers this time round. But after Lewis Graben scored on the 80th minute. And this, Johnny, you know, you look at the stats, pretty level. They had 55% possession, 15 shots to 12. For me, this is one of those games that we can just kind of chalk up as being a generally positive point. Forest, obviously, in a good bit of form. One thing I would take from it is the fact that we had Michael Elise and Jordan Abito on the wing. That partnership, if you can call it a partnership, is coming to a sort of fruition, because both of the players are players who are able to get back defensively and make a good contribution there. And I hope we both see them start on the flank at Cardiff on Friday. So, generally speaking, a good point. A nice little note that twice in a week we've got a late equaliser against Nottingham Forest, and keeps us in a pretty sturdy position, albeit not a brilliant position, with the, you know, the whole playoffs and how the table's looking.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's the typical thing of, if you'd said you could have a point from Forest before the game, would you have taken it? I think most fans would have done. Obviously, we want to get those wins so that we can make a chase for the playoffs. And I think we're now about 9 points off that with a game in hand on the team that is currently there, Preston. But a lot of teams do have a game in hand because obviously this round of the FA Cup has just happened. So there's been a few delays in terms of those matches being played. But no, I think, you know, like we've said, the fight back that this team is showing when they go behind is really impressive, and the team spirit. And I mean, I was at the game today, so I wasn't listening to BBC Berkshire, but in the car on the way home, I heard a bit of Liam Moore, and he was sort of saying, you know, the spirit around the camp is really high, and you just get that sense. And when you're a team that's losing and things are going against you, and you don't necessarily agree with the manager, as seemed to happen under the previous few regimes, those goals, they go in, and the players and the fans think, right, well, that's it, we're not getting back in this. Whereas now that we're still riding that positive momentum, we know that we can get results, we know that we can score goals all of a sudden, there isn't that sense of doom and gloom. There is that sense, right, we can get back into this match. And, you know, sure enough, we've done it again. And a little bit of confusion over the goal. Could the goalie have done better? Did Baldock think he was offside or something? I mean, God knows what happened in the aftermath of that, but yeah, who cares? And you know, it's another important result which keeps our positive momentum going. Mainly, I mean, it's a little bit of a concern, obviously, now that we haven't won in the league since New Year's Day. But you know, in fairness, they've been some tough games. 2-2 against Forest, and away at Millwall, who are on a decent run. So, you know, as we come into the latter stages of January and then into February, our run-in looks, fingers crossed, relatively straightforward in the grand scheme of things. So if we can keep this momentum going, keep that belief in the camp that we can keep getting results, then there's no reason that we can't make a charge up the table. Whether we reach the playoffs or not is a lottery, as they say. But what you've seen over the last 2 or 3 months is that this team believes in itself again. And that's the most important thing, is that they're buying into the system, they're buying into each other, and, you know, they're buying into that team spirit and that belief in themselves.
It is. And you mentioned the run in there. I've just having a quick look. It looks like our last 5 away games are all against teams who certainly won't be challenging for promotion. I think Blackburn is the highest placed team out of those 5. And also another note I'm just having a look at now is that of the league draws that we have had all season, 5 of those have come under Bowen compared to the 2 under Gomez, and 4 of Bowen's 5 draws have come away from home. And that is those are 4 points there that maybe you could say, oh, we'd like to win 2 of those, but it doesn't work out that way. Usually you have to earn those points, and those are 4 points that, you know, if you took him away from Reading and gave him to our opponents, we'd be back in, you know, 19th position, basically, and thinking, oh, God, maybe there's a bit of a bit of a relegation issue here. Certainly not where we think we are now. So, yeah, I think it's just one of those good points. Probably a bit of a low-key affair, I suppose, given it is on Wednesday night and up in Nottingham. But hopefully a good sign for us going to Cardiff on Friday. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. And mailbag is on the agenda now, and listening to what you guys think. And of course, you can always get in touch with us on thetarlestend@gmail.com, Facebook and Twitter as well. So let's have a listen to what your questions are this week.
Send in your views to thetarlestend@gmail.com and have your say in the mailbag.
Flute Mag starts us off with a question on Twitter saying, has the bubble burst with, well, I suppose with the fact that we haven't won in a week, and also, you know, three games without a win. I suppose if you want to spin it out, you could say one win in six, I suppose, because of the Blackpool games and everything. But for me, I would say that it's also one defeat in six is the other way of looking at that. And the Cardiff game does...
You'll make a spin doctor yet, Mark.
there's always two sides to every story. And I think for this one, I'm edging on the side that with the cup and with the changing teams and with the picking up of points from behind and, you know, the nature of the games, we are just about keeping inside the bubble at the moment. And we need a couple of defeats before it's really burst.
Yeah, I think with all these things, you have to put it in the context of the grand scheme of things. And the grand scheme of things is probably, is this a squad that's good enough to be in the playoffs? I'm not so sure. Is it a top half squad? Probably. So, you know, ultimately, if you look at the bad start that we've had, and, you know, I've not got it in front of me, but if you look at if the league season basically started since Mark Bowen was in charge, I'm sure that we would be somewhere near the top half, if not pushing for the top six. So if you look at it in that context, I think we are performing right on schedule. And I mean, has the bubble burst? Well, I don't think so, because we've had a run of three defeats in four earlier in the season. We've bounced back from that to win four in a row. So I think you can't forget that you're not just going to win five. We're not just going to win every game from here on out. There are going to be ups and downs as teams adjust to you, and then you adjust and players get injured, etc. So I don't think the bubble necessarily has burst. I think it's just one of those things where you're going to have runs of form throughout the season where we're going to win a few games and then we're going to lose a few games. And like I said, I think the good thing that we've seen from Mark Bowen's team is that they seem to be able to put bad results behind them. You know, I remember the game against Birmingham, where we lost 3-2 at home. We were absolutely woeful, and we did not deserve for that game to be 3-2, and we didn't lose another game until we lost to Millwall the other day, and that was, you know, about 10 games. So I don't think the bubble has burst. I think it's just one of those things where, yeah, like I say, you're going to have runs of form throughout the season, and in the grand scheme of things, we're comfortably, well, touch wood, we're comfortably mid-table. And I think, you know, if we get a mid-table finish, then we look back at the start of the season, would most fans have taken that? Absolutely, I think, yes.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's we've got a bit more. If it was an experiment, we need a bit more of a sample size, I think, to truly say that the bubble has burst. And Wim asked this week, of course, founder of the Tyler Sten has asked with his pretty well, this is the million-dollar question, I suppose, and it might prove to be worth quite a few more than just $1 million if someone can answer this question. Is Danny Loader, can you see what his best position is yet? And the reason I think this is such an important question is for Danny Loader's career, whether it's at Reading next season or wherever, if he can get a coach, or whether this is a problem within himself or something, if he can get someone who can define what his best position is, or what his best role is in the attack, then I think he has a real good chance of being a good striker in the English game. As it stands, I can't tell you for sure that he's a penalty box finisher, although that seems to be what he tends to do for the under-23s. I can't tell you that he's a pacey striker. I couldn't tell you that he's a hold-up striker. I don't think he's necessarily brilliantly creative on or off the ball. He has a lot of assets, his technique. He seems to be good positioning, but that extra little bit to say he does that for the team and that is good, I can't name you one defining thing about him.
Yeah, you can't name one standout quality, can you? He's not, you know, if you look at the other players that are on the pitch today, you know, Sonny Aluko's got obvious skill and can pick a pass. Gareth McCleary can take on a man and put a decent cross in the box. Yaku Mate's got power and, you know, is a decent finisher and is decent in the air. I can't say, having seen Danny Loader quite a bit now, you can't really say what his defining quality is. You know, is he a good finisher? Well, he hasn't really had many opportunities to do that. Is he a good dribbler? I mean, every time he got the ball today, he seemed to take two touches and give it away. I can't remember a time particularly where he put his foot on the ball and managed to take it past someone and find someone else. I thought he actually had a pretty terrible game. Yeah, it's really tough to say. And it's disappointing as much as anything, because you could see, obviously, going on reputation in the under-23s, he was such an exciting prospect. And it can just be difficult at times for those, you know, for those under-23s to make that step up to senior level. You know, you only have to look at someone like Aaron Cool, who was so impressive in the younger age groups and then just never seemed to kick on once you reach the seniors. Does he need to bulk up a little bit? I'm not so sure about that. Maybe he needs, you know, it's just... It's tough to say, and you don't want to have a go at him at all, because he's one of our homegrown talents, and he's obviously been so impressive earlier in his career. You really hope that he will make it, and he will sort of figure that out, or someone will bring that out of him. But yeah, at the moment, I can't seem to see what that is.
Yeah, and I do kind of worry that it's a case of us reputationally thinking that he is better than maybe what he actually is. But then it's not just Reading fans this time. Sometimes it is Reading fans.
Well, he's had the interest from Wolves, hasn't he?
Man United, and you know, the fact he's not signed the contract, if he wasn't getting interest from that, you would think that he probably would. And, you know, the England under-19s, etc., it does seem like a lot of people in the game have a clear view of him as a star for the future. But from our position, we're probably almost maybe the only ones who maybe doubt that.
Yeah. It's tough to say. I mean, maybe he does need an extended run in the team in order to, you know, in order to sort of prove himself. But it's tough to justify that at the moment as well, really, especially when, you know, you look at someone like the next big thing, Michael Olise, and he seems to be performing whenever he gets time on the pitch. So it's frustrating in a way, and I think almost the presence of Olise probably doesn't help Loader as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. One player who you know, who is someone who has had an extended run in the team and is now suddenly back for another crack is Sonny Aluko. And David asks, is it time to go or time to keep him? He had a good 60 minutes against Cardiff, but then faded. I think we have to sell him to get him off the wage bill. My first point on that is practical, as in who, with 18 months still on his contract, Sonny Aluko, it's not like a, you know, may as well just get him out for free if for 6 months. He's got 18 months left on his contract. Selling him is easier said than done, because we could only get rid of him, you know, bit of a harsh phrase, but we could only really actually move him on to Beijing Rene last time, because the Chinese owners of Reading own Beijing as well. So you'd imagine that kind of helped get that deal through quite significantly. And, you know, he had a good 60 minutes, which I think is a fair point that David makes. And we're in a situation now where he's going to take time to get back into the game. He hadn't played for a number of months before he came back to us earlier this month. So 60 minutes, you know, you can't necessarily get a full 90 minutes out of him yet. And he might not have played the full 90 on another day with the injuries, etc. So really, Johnny, I think with Aluko, we're just going to have to bide our time and accept that certainly for the rest of the season, he's going to be here.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I think you could see flashes of promise from him. And I think it's too early to write him off just yet. And that might be famous last words from me. But I think a bit like someone like Chris Gunter and Gareth McCleary has come back into the fold. Maybe they just needed a fresh start, a fresh pair of eyes, just to say, look, forget about what's happened, both with the fans and on the pitch. And look, just go out and do your own thing. And you could see that there was obvious quality there. He picked a few passes. He took on his man a couple of times. It just seemed to be that little bit of, whether it was, you know, I remember a couple of times, once he tried to play a pass through to Maite and Maite made a different run. So just that little bit of miscommunication or not on the same wavelength. And another time when he was running through the middle, and I think he just didn't realize that someone was about to tackle him from behind. So maybe it's just a case that he needs to readjust to the game or get himself up mentally and physically to the level of the Championship. You know, I'm not sure what level the CSL is at exactly, but I'd imagine it's probably slightly below the Championship. I think, look, he's not going to be a player that is starting for us every week, obviously, but he's a useful player to have around the squad. And if we can't get rid of him, then I don't think we should just exile him like we did with Gunter and McCleary earlier last year.
I think we proved to ourselves that exiling those players doesn't actually really work, does it? In terms of whether it's the squad mentality or the fans or the players themselves, it doesn't really do them any good, does it?
Well, no. And I mean, look, he might not be. Look, the 7.5 million or whatever we paid for him is now a sunk cost. You almost have to write that off. You say, look, we're not going to get anything for him if we get anything for him at all. But if we can't get rid of him, then I don't think we should just say, well, you're not very useful to us. And I think, like I said, this is a new regime. You can see that he has some quality in there. I think, you know, him sitting just behind a striker or perhaps out on a wing, he does have some value to the team, certainly. I think, you know, maybe in the summer, try and offload him if things don't work out, then, you know, I think that should be the tactic.
Yeah, we'll see how that one goes. And in terms of when we next see him, I suppose that the questions here, Sam Richards asking, was 11 changes really necessary? And Lachlan King saying, if we get an easier tie in the fifth round, obviously we'll have the draw before the replay. He's asking, should Bowen put out a stronger squad for the replay? He thinks he should. Aluko's probably going to play in that game. And I obviously would like to see a strong team out for that game. We got away with it to an extent against Blackpool. I think you play that game 10 times. I think we probably don't win it the majority of those times, but we did win it, obviously, in the one that we played. But going to Cardiff, that doesn't seem like the sort of game that we're going to have much of a chance in with a reserve team or with a very youthful team. So I would prefer us to put out a strong team. It depends how the rigours of Championship football have got, you know, whether we've got players carrying knocks or anything like that. In terms of the 11 changes for Saturday, I mean, we didn't get beat, so that you can argue that it was necessary if we then go and win on Tuesday. I suppose it's the only real way that we can guarantee those things. If the results are fine, then the changes don't matter to an extent. But Johnny, do you think there is actually any chance of Bowen playing a stronger squad in the replay, or do we think that whatever happens, it's going to be a weaker team?
I think it will be weaker to some extent. I'm not sure in terms of, you know, if we draw Man City or Liverpool away and that's potentially a big money spinner, would he put out a stronger team? Perhaps, but
I'd be tempted to play a weaker team if we get those two games because they'll get absolutely smashed.
Yeah, but I think with the financial bigger picture, then yeah, getting a little bit of that and getting the TV money and the you know, the receipts you get just from getting to the next round, then I think potentially that would outweigh a little bit of embarrassment on the telly. Although to be fair, who was it we played last year in the FA Cup or before? Man United, and they only beat us 1-0, was it?
I think it's 2-0 at Old Trafford, and then the year before that, we went 2 years before that, and that was when they beat us by like 4-0, I think, when Stan was in charge. But Gomez was a relatively decent 2-0 defeat, I think.
Yeah, back when we were all waving the Portuguese flags. look, the thing is, you know, we played today being Saturday. We then play Tuesday, Friday, the following Tuesday, which is the FA Cup game, and then we play Saturday, and then Tuesday and Saturday again. So that is, you know, that will be seven games basically in the space of 3 weeks, and four of, well, yeah, five of those games will have been championship games. And I think, you know, by now Mark Bowen has made it pretty clear that the championship is what's important to him. So I think in a sense it will, it, as much as he might say it doesn't, I think it might depend on who we get in the draw on Monday. But I think equally, you know, if we win the next two games in the championship, then he might want to try and keep that momentum going, because then we go into two home games in the championship against Hull, against West Brom. And if you're flying, there's no reason you'd want to upset that momentum.
No, it's a good point. I think it just depends as to the state of the squad. If we do feel like we're carrying a couple bits, then I think he will change it. And it will be disappointing, I think, from my point of view, that if Bowen is to be Reading manager for a number of years, and that we, every single year in the FA Cup, we put out a weakish team and make 11 changes, it will be a bit disappointing, because as a club, it kind of goes back to that argument for me that we don't have too much history, and we've always had in the last 10, 15 years good cup runs and really enjoyed that and have been the basis of a lot of our seasons. But then at the same point, Bowen knows that he got appointed because Jose Gomez was not going to get Reading promoted, and however unlikely we think it is, that's his job. So that's probably what's going to win out. A general question about the FA Cup, unless you wanted to jump in, Johnny.
Oh, no, I don't think this is necessarily going to be the idea every year under Mark Bowen. I'm assuming he doesn't become, you know, the latest manager we sack in October, as has been the cycle for the last however many years. I think, look, it's just a case of pragmatism. The fact that, you know, would we prefer to get to the fifth or sixth round of the FA Cup? Because realistically, that's as far as it's going to go. Or would we prefer to get to the playoffs? I think we'd prefer to get to the playoffs. And so, yeah, you know, it is a little bit annoying that he makes 11 changes rather than just five or six. At the same time, you can see the bigger pitch reason why he's doing it. So it's annoying, but I don't think it's, you know, he's just doing it for a laugh.
No, that's fair enough. And Lloyd Royal actually asked about the FA Cup in general, saying, was the FA Cup better when squads were smaller and there were fewer subs? Should we introduce FA Cup squads where you have to name 23 players for that season's competition or something? Any better ideas? Today was a second team versus a first team. Just looking for a fair system, although we did still draw. I think with the FA Cup, they're going to try and trim bits off as much as they can in the coming years. And they've already done that to the extent that it's only up to the fourth round where we have replays now. I have a feeling I saw somewhere, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Johnny, that the next round is going to be midweek.
Yep.
Because...
So the big clubs are getting their wish?
Yeah, and that's a bit disappointing to me anyway, and it certainly won't help the idea that we need to play stronger squads in it, because it's going to be in between two league games, which is the bread and butter now. So I think the FA Cup is only going to become, sadly, less and less important as, you know, the years and decades proceed. And that's just going to be something in terms of how a championship club can approach it. It really depends on the manager and what the manager thinks. Does the manager see it as an opportunity, like Neil Harris did today, to build some momentum, keep his squad moving towards an ultimate goal by time on the pitch? Or does the manager see it by, you know, bringing in other players to keep their fitness up, giving youth team players a chance, keeping his first team players rested? Unless you do literally force the teams to play their first team, as they've tried to do in the Johnson's Paint Trophy or whatever it's called now, for the League Two teams, they're saying you can only make five changes or some such nonsense. I don't think that sort of works. So therefore, we are just kind of doomed to whatever, you know, whatever we get now, basically.
Yeah, well, ultimately, you know, the problem is that the Premier League is such a money-spinning cash cow. This isn't me trying to sound massively cynical. It's literally the fact of it.
True.
The Premier League teams want to, you know, ensure that they keep that money-spinning going, and equally with the Champions League, etc. Whilst the Championship teams are all fighting to get into that. So basically, I think you've got a pool of probably from about you know, 9th to 13th in the Premier League who are going to play their strongest teams. I mean, you only have to look at, I mean, obviously Watford were playing Tranmere in midweek, so they didn't need to, well, maybe they did need to, but you wouldn't have thought that they needed to put out a full strength team in that tie. But you know, they lost, but for Watford, the priority is staying up, because that the staying up to them is worth, let's say, £100 million, whereas getting to the next round of the FA Cup is worth maybe 100,000. You know, for us, getting to the playoffs could be worth the £120 million game, whereas getting to the fifth round of the FA Cup would be worth, yeah, you know, 200,000. And, you know, unfortunately, that's what the money is. That's what the money dictates. So, you know, it was a perfect example, Everton v Liverpool, where Liverpool put out their kids because they're fighting on many, many more fronts than just the FA Cup, whereas Everton basically put out a full-strength side and Liverpool still won. So,
yeah, and a local media outlet that will remain nameless said in the week they did an article about the huge cash windfall that will come Reading's way if they beat Cardiff in the FA Cup fourth round, and I think it was about 180 grand, which to you and me, I mean, I'd love, that's a windfall. If Reading winning 180 grand or me winning 180 grand if Reading won the game, I'd definitely be saying that Bowen should be playing the full team. But for Reading Football Club, it does kind of pale into comparison these days. Final question then, as we look ahead to the Tuesday game and obviously the games ahead, is Paolo asking, do we go with two up top for Bristol? Because we've had kind of a 4-2-3-1 that seeps back in recently, especially with, as I said earlier, Obita and Lisa on the wing for Forest, with Puskas up top, Sam Baldock battling for a start, having got his goal, Danny Loder's in and around it, Lucas Boye wasn't in the squad against Cardiff, but he was against Forest, and of course Yaku Meite is in there as well, pushing for what you could say is certainly a deserved start. So, two up top, Johnny, do you think it's, you know, at home, going for it a bit more? Do we think that it's likely?
It could be likely, because, you know, looking at our recent form, we have kind of struggled to score multiple goals. I mean, obviously we did against Blackpool both times, but you know, aside from that, this year we sort of struggled to find the net. So I think you could see that, and you know, Baldock obviously is showing that he can find the net when he's given the chance. Puskas, not quite so much, but perhaps he needs time on the pitch as well. You know, the only sort of problem I'd have with two up front is we don't really have any sort of conventional, or many sort of conventional wingers. You know, Meite is very much, you wouldn't feel comfortable playing Meite in a 4-4-2 on the wing, unless you were to play, you know, like Obita and McCleary. So I think it could happen. And, you know, the fact is we've got options. I think, also think Mark Bowen might be a little bit loath to play both, seeing as we've already lost Joao for 3 months. So if another one goes down while we're playing two up front, then that would be a bit of a disaster, and certainly would mean we'd have to find someone else in January.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, because let's move on to news bites now, where we'll discuss the not very much, really.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
The name Pedro Mendes does certainly ring some familiarity for a football fan who watched the Premier League in the early noughties. But he's a young striker now. He plays for Sporting Lisbon. And apparently, according to Portuguese media, Reading are linked with a loan option to buy him. A verdict is going to come, well, in the few days after the report broke. So I guess that's going to be early in the week as we sit here now. Johnny, are you worried that there's a lack of transfer rumours going around? Because a lot of fans do kind of feed off these, and a lot of fans these days, certainly on social media and everything, kind of use rumours, I think, as a sign of how strong their club is. As, you know, Man United get linked with a move for Islam Slimani or Odi Ighalo, everyone just kind of laughs at them, because I guess it's Man United and their players aren't very good. For Reading, we're just not being linked with any players, and we certainly haven't signed anyone yet. And secondly, I suppose, you know, is there much point signing a striker who isn't particularly near the Sporting Lisbon first 11? Lone player, I guess there's kind of low responsibility with it, but even with the injuries, is it not actually just better to just stick with what we've got?
Yeah, I mean, this kind of comes back to what I said earlier in the earlier in the season when I did podcast, is you almost want to wait a month to see where we're at and whether we should, in a sense, go for it this season with the financial fair play. Because if it comes in a month's time and we're still, you know, potentially only 5 or 6 points off the playoffs, then you'd probably say, right, you know, let's go for it. Let's put all our eggs in one basket and let's try and make it. Whereas if we fall a little bit behind, then there's the sort of time when you perhaps say, okay, let's save it for next season and build the ammunition for next season. I mean, Thiago Alori can't have given Pedro Mendes a particularly good review of Reading, judging by his time here. Although Thiago Alori was okay when he was here, I suppose. As for the transfer rumours, you know, I'm not too concerned. I mean, perhaps it's a little bit of the standing of where Reading are these days, that perhaps they don't want these rumours being linked to say, oh, you're being linked with Reading. Ooh, maybe you should be linked with a better team than Reading, sort of thing. so if we can fly under the radar, that's fine. As for the Man United point that you brought up, it seems to be, to me, that it's only Man United who just ever get a link with players. It really does seem like more of a PR exercise than actual general links with them. I seem to remember in August they were being linked with all manner of players like Mario Mandzukic, and just none of them worked out. But you think, oh, Man United being linked with Mario Mandzukic, they're still a big club. When, any Man U fans that might be listening, they're just not as good as they used to be, unfortunately. So, I'm not too concerned about the lack of transfer rumours. You know, as I remember it in August, when the likes of Ejaria and Raphael and Miazga all came in, I don't seem to remember much buzz in the build up to those moves. So perhaps these things sometimes work best behind closed doors.
Yeah, I know. I suppose on the Man United point as well, when it comes to, you know, a lot of nonsense gets talked when it's obviously Man United. Oh, they're doing rubbish. They're plausible. They'll sign someone like Mandzukic because they're rubbish, sort of thing. Whereas with Reading, I suppose, because we're in that kind of nether region, aren't we? We're not really massively pushing for promotion. Yeah, we're not an absolute shambles. So yeah, there's not too much to talk about. And in terms of talking about the other teams of Reading FC, just quickly run you through. There's only been one game since the last podcast, and that was the under-18s played on Saturday afternoon. A Premier League Cup quarter-final victory over Everton with Nahum Melvin Lambert with a hat-trick in that 3-2 victory. Stoke, Chelsea and Man City were also in the final four. That's hopefully a good chance of some success there, and the under-18s getting a good confidence boost out of that. Under-23s next in action in the Premier League Cup against Colchester. Not entirely sure how Colchester in the Premier League Cup, but okay. Thursday the 30th at 7 p.m. for those of you who want to head over to Essex for that. And the women are playing on Sunday tomorrow, 2 p.m. in Dartford. That's against London City Lionesses in the FA Cup. So hopefully a good run to start from there. And, well, speaking of runs, we may as well kick on and continue this slowly forming unbeaten run, I suppose you can call it now. We had a decent one that ended, and now we've got a smallish one that's starting out now. May as well keep that going, and we'll talk about who we're playing in the next week in Big Match Preview.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So we've got a lot of midweek rearranged clashes at the moment, and this one is the Tuesday night, 8 p.m. at the Mad Stad at home to Bristol City. It's the game, for those of you paying attention, we would have played on Saturday had we not made it to the FA Cup fourth round. Bristol City didn't, and therefore they've had more time off, Johnny. However, as we have spent most of the show talking about, our first team has also had the weekend off, so therefore that doesn't really count then, does it? We're basically both coming into this game with a reasonable time of rest.
Yeah. I mean, this is, you know, if we get the result on Tuesday, then it will be one that you look at and say, right, Mark Byrne was right to to rest them. Whereas if we go and lose, then it'll be, well, why didn't we play the full strength team and get a plum tie against Arsenal or something in the fifth round? So it should be a decent game. As I think, as you said earlier in the show, Bristol are one of those teams that are sort of similar position to us in terms of the league, and like we were saying earlier with the form, they seem to have, well, they had a big slip earlier in the year or just a sort of around the turn of the year, and are just slowly sort of getting things back into gear, although they did lose to Shrewsbury in the FA Cup. So look, it's a decent opportunity, and I think whilst a draw at Forest was creditable in terms of playoff aspirations, I think this is the game where you've got to say, we need to win this, because otherwise we will be basically 10 points off the playoffs, because Bristol are on 44 with a game in hand on Preston, who are in there with 46. And we're on 37. So Bristol, if they win, will go 10 points clear of us, with only 16 games left. And even with our slightly favourable run in, that looks a pretty big task. So, yeah, I mean, this is ultimately, I think this is the game that we need to get the result in if we're to be celebrating it at the end of the season.
Well, looking from afar and the chances that we have of beating Bristol City, the word that I would use to describe their form is inconsistent. They've had two wins, two losses and a draw in the last five. They're the fourth best away side in the division if you look at the overall season, but in the last six, they've won three and lost three. Not a bad record, really, but it does mean that if you catch them on the right day, you've got a good chance, and we've got 7 points from our last nine at home now. So, in terms of prediction then, Johnny, obviously we got the Friday night trip to Cardiff after that. That's, for those wondering why it's on a Friday night, it's because the Six Nations kicks off in Cardiff the day after, and Wales is obviously a rugby country, not a football country, certainly, when it comes to their championship football team, and it's not on TV as well.
Teams, let's not forget Swansea.
Yes, of course, but the Six Nations, probably if it played in Swansea, they probably would have let us play the Cardiff game on the Saturday.
No, that's true.
But yeah, we're not on TV, I don't think either. So Friday night trip to Cardiff, we'll talk about, we won't make predictions for now, but in terms of predictions for Bristol City, Johnny, you've looking at your recent form in the prediction table, and reasonable, as with pretty much all of us have struggled in the last five games, actually, because none of us really thought we were going to win at Preston or Fulham. Then Forest, both sides were draws, which we don't really like predicting draws, and then a defeat at Millwall, I suppose we're a bit more optimistic for that one. Sim, funnily enough, was the only person who got a draw at Forest and got one all, so he's now taken a pretty good jump into second place on 17 points, 3 points ahead of yourself. So what do you think then for Bristol City?
This is tough. I think I'll go for a one-all draw. Yet another draw. I think this is the sort of game, like you said, Bristol are good away from home. I don't think we're in the best of form at the moment. And I think once we come out of this sort of run of Bristol City and then the two Cardiff games, and then, we get into Hull and Sheffield Wednesday and the likes of Wigan and Barnsley and Stoke, which are far more winnable games. I think that will be when we really start to motor and hopefully make a bit of a push. But I think for now, a one-all draw against Bristol. I'd like to win, but I think, yeah, in the grand, I keep saying in the grand scheme of things, in the bigger picture, but I think that's a decent result for this team, which ultimately is still to all intents and purposes a mid-table team, despite the fact that we've had an obvious upturn in form since November or so.
grand scheme of things, I think in American sport, they always use the word process, don't they? That's what they always say in America.
Trust the process.
And that is, that's, I guess, what I'm not too sure what our process is. We're the Reading way, which is also not something that I'm entirely sure what is these days. But nonetheless.
Everything is the Reading way. The Reading way is all encompassing, Mark.
It is. It is the omnipotent way, I suppose, for this football club. I'm going to go with the 2-1 win, actually, because with Bristol City being a bit inconsistent and with us being a bit decent, actually, I do think that both teams are good enough to score. And I do think that we've got a bit of grit about us to snag the win. So I'm optimistically going to say a 2-1 victory, which I think will be another positive moment in what is actually turning out, despite the fact we're 15th. And despite the fact, you know, you could say, no, we're only 3 points above 18th, and if you added 3 points to us, we'd still be nowhere near the playoffs. I think, you know, as Johnny just said, we've got a long way to go in the season just yet, even though it is getting towards February now. So we will see about that. This show will return after, notably, not only the Bristol City and the Cardiff game, but after transfer deadline day. So keep your eyes peeled to the Tyler Send Twitter and the website as well, of course, for all things going on that. We probably won't be doing like a live blog on the website because, quite frankly, every year we've ever done a live blog on transfer deadline day, nothing happened. So we will we'll be back with the podcast probably next Monday afternoon. By that, I mean the 3rd, not the 27th, because this was a work circumstances and everything moved forward, this podcast. So we'll be back in about 10 days or so. And thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you, Johnny, for popping by this week.
No problem.
And we'll be back after a couple of potentially decisive games on Reading season. It could be a case of two wins and we're flying through into, you know, the playoff ascendancy. It could be a case of two defeats and we'll know our place and we'll keep quiet and move on to hopefully maybe a cup run or something like that.
I think that would be the most depressing outcome from this week is if we lose both games. Nothing in the FA Cup. Going to be mid-table. Right, okay. Let's start next season now.
Yeah, no, actually, that's a good point. This is a...
But we don't want that. That's not going to happen.
No, and knowing this team as well, we'll probably do something in the middle. So we'll probably be sat here this time next week thinking about another hopefully potential week, potentially a decisive week upcoming. But at some point, these decisive weeks are actually going to be decisive. And if this is the one that is...
Yeah, I'm just dreaming of another pitch invasion to celebrate not getting in the playoffs.
Well, as it stands, if this is the decisive week in the bad terms, then we can have that on, you know, February the 8th against Hull. So we'll get it in nice and early for the old no, we haven't made it pitch invasion. But until then, and until, you know, we do have a decisive outcome for this season, I suppose it is nice, isn't it, really? It's the end of January, and I think for the five of the last six seasons, or roughly about that, we've had the season done and dusted by this point. So,
well, certainly looking over our shoulders rather than looking up at the promised land, put it that way.
Well, that is true. And we'll be back. I'll finish this outro at some point in the next minute or so.
No, let's keep going. Let's keep going. No, it's done.
This episode is officially done. And this time next week, we'll be back with the show that we'll be talking about Reading Football Club and the results, good or bad, that they got. Until then, thank you for listening and come on your ass. Even when it seems it's on your tail, but I always leave a trail.
Kissing out a cap, but which you do it by.